Portobello Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Our Future Hood, a series of shows about how we can work together to create a greener future. It's part of the Mayor of London's Future Neighbourhoods 2030 programme, and in the process, we'll be helping ourselves as well as our bit of the planet. In this episode, we're looking at flooding, and in particular at the flash floods of July 2021. They had devastating effects on homes, businesses and schools. Portobello Road became a river in minutes and it became national news. Climate change means London can expect more intense, heavy downpours, even if summers become drier overall. Kensington and Chelsea has the highest number of properties at risk of surface water and sewer flooding in the whole of London. Nottingdale is particularly at risk, especially the basements. Water from other parts of London gravitates here, and we have a high proportion of hard surfaces which feed the water into the Victorian sewers and drainage systems. So what can we do? I set off to meet the people who are working to mitigate the worst effects and to make sure the next extreme weather event doesn't cause the same level of damage. We're here in the plush surroundings of the Town Hall, and I'm delighted to be joined by Fiona Fleming-Brown. Welcome, Fiona.
Hi, Piers.
You are part of the flood group?
Yeah, I'm part of the Portobello Flood Group, which is under the National Flood Forum, which is working with Thames Water and the council and local residents.
And we're also joined by James Latham, and flooding is your responsibility here at the council?
Yes, it is, yep. I'm the Principal Flood and Water Management Officer here at the council, so deal with everything to do with flooding, drainage, those kind of matters.
There was a major flood event, wasn't there, in July 2021. I remember it was the day after we'd lost the European Championships. The rain came pouring down, turned into a river on Portobello Road, and then started coming west. Now, you and your neighbours were personally very affected by that.
Yeah, we were. I mean, at first it looked like just a heavy storm, and then the rain came heavier, the bins started floating, and then water started coming in because it had risen so much into the basement. And at the same time, there was sewer flooding, so water came up through sinks and lavatories and washhand basins.
Wow, so you were actually being besieged from two angles.
Yeah, it's very frightening when it happens. You think, I don't know what's happening, where is it coming from, how quickly is it going to happen? But I wasn't flooded as quickly or as badly as some other people. Some other people had really sudden depths of water and couldn't get out of their basements. So that's a really scary situation. They daren't open the door because there's too much water there.
And not only does that sound frightening, but then, how long did it take the floodwaters to recede?
Floodwaters went down really quickly because in about 15 minutes, suddenly there was a draining. And so 1 minute, there was, you know, a couple of inches of water. The next minute, everything had gone. And so it shows you how quickly it can come and go. But if you lived in a basement where the water got trapped for any reason, or you had really large volumes, then those people needed their basements pumped out.
Yeah, they call it flash flooding for a reason, of course. So you mentioned a sudden draining. What was that? Was that a sluice gate being opened further down the line, or you just don't know?
We just don't know. I mean, the London Flood Review, which is the independent panel, looked at this. There was no conclusive reason why that should happen. So this being the era it is, there are many myths about it. Everybody who's listening has probably heard one of them. We don't know, but it was very dramatic.
What was the situation you and your neighbours were left with?
Well, if you had sewer water, it's contaminated water. So the first thing was you were lucky if you knew it was contaminated because you knew you had to be careful. Not everybody knew because you can have contaminated water that just looks like ordinary bath water. It doesn't smell, it's not brown and disgusting. So if you knew, then you knew that you had to remove everything, carpets, flooring, under kitchen, plinths, anything like that. And you also knew that anything that was on the floor needed to be thrown away. And so some people, if they were lucky enough to have contents insurance, were able to claim against that. But not everybody has insurance. So some people, and quite a few of them, lost really precious things. They had damage that they couldn't replace.
And I suppose if you don't have the insurance and you can't afford to replace everything, even though it's been awash with contaminated water, you're very reluctant to throw the sofa away or throw the carpet away.
You are. And some people got respiratory infections. It's bad. I mean, there was no proper information to tell people it was contaminated. And going forward, that's something that must never happen again.
No, that sounds very, very dangerous. James, I read the strategy that the council's produced this morning, and I'd forgotten how many flooding events there have been in North Kensington, and also that they've become more and more common. You know, they were relatively rare up till, say, 1990, and then since the 90s, they've become more and more frequent. What is the connection between climate change and flood issues?
Yeah, so I think it's worth understanding that the sewer network in the borough is connected to sewer networks in adjacent boroughs as well. So there are big sewers that come from Westminster, from Camden, that pass through the borough and bring floodwater, potential floodwater, into the borough. There are designed, every drain, every sewer is designed to have a certain capacity. And with temperatures rising, as we're seeing in the summer, the capacity of the atmosphere to hold moisture increases. So warmer air can hold more moisture. So when that becomes unstable in the summer months, it can release much more rain, much more moisture in a shorter space of time.
Almost like a monsoon.
So exactly. So it's similar convective rainfall. Like a bit like monsoons.
When we get an extreme flooding event, what happens to the water? I mean, I think in 2021, the streets had been very dry for some days. Suddenly you get a lot of water unleashed from the sky. What should happen if the systems are working well?
So what should happen is water from roof areas or roads should be hopefully slowed down on their way into the sewer network. Then they go into the local sewer network, and then from there are spills that go into larger sewers, and then from some of those there are spills that go into even larger sewers. So we've had 150 years of constructing larger and larger sewers, and what should happen is it can cope with that water. Unfortunately, there will be circumstances where the rain is so extreme that even the design system as it is at the moment won't be able to cope with that water. So that's why it's really important that the work that we're doing to try and slow the water before it gets into the sewer, because there's so much you can do with water once it's in the sewer, but trying to slow it down before it gets there is the ideal mechanism.
This obviously didn't work on that night in July 2021.
No. And we were told that it was a one in, James, was that a 135?
185, I think.
Yeah. So it was an extreme event, but there were also bits of the infrastructure that didn't work properly. So there were clogged drains. There were other bits of the sewer network that weren't working properly. So there are a lot of moving parts in this, and you've got to have everything working perfectly. So I think there are a lot of lessons to learn and a lot of things to be done in the future to make that more resilient.
Is there a big difference between the threat of rainwater overpowering the system and the threat of sewage water overpowering the system?
Because we have a combined sewer network, so everything kind of just gets mixed in together. It's likely to have capacity for the sewage water that goes into the system. So from flushing toilets and sinks and things like that. there are properties that have been affected just from sewage not in a rainfall event, and that could be to do with a blockage somewhere within the pipe if something's built up, but because it's combined, the majority of the properties that are flooded from sewage and surface water, it's normally from a rainfall event. Some properties, as Fiona mentioned, could be affected potentially by both surface water coming from, you know, external areas, as well as from the sewer network. But it's really complex, really integrated within the fabric of the neighbourhood, and also there's a cascade from one neighbourhood that was affected by flooding to other a bit further down the hill or down the watercourse, and those you know communities that were affected are connected to each other by where the rain goes.
The schools in the area were also very badly affected by the floods. So we talked to the headmaster at Avondale. Ben, could you tell us about the flooding in July 2021?
Yeah, I mean, it was a period where there was an extreme amount of rainfall. I think, you know, for the modern era, it was the hardest rain and the fastest we'd had in memory. We're living in an increasingly hard and built-up environment with very little absorption. People are, you know, paving over their gardens and there's less greenery. And so I think the natural absorption and slowing down of the runoff is a real problem. And that was the case with Avondale. It's an older building. It's over 100 years old. It has a basement where the boiler was housed. And some of the water came through into there, particularly because of an old coal chute. So that tells you the age of the building there, that the coal chute was where a lot of the water ingress occurred. The flooding completely destroyed the boiler and a lot of other equipment in there, which meant that the heating was out of action. We were on a temporary boiler as a result of that, and the cost was in the tens of thousands of pounds.
What did you do to mitigate it?
There was a temporary boiler put in. We've now come off gas as a heating system. We've now got air source heat pumps, which is good for many reasons. But also, so that doesn't happen again, the ingress areas have been completely covered over and we've been floodproofed effectively. So I feel reassured going forward, were there to be a recurrence of the 2021 summer flooding, we wouldn't experience the damage that happened at the time. We've also got some suds, planters in there, so some of the runoff will be slowed down through the planters. So I think that will do something to mitigate the extreme weather in that sense.
You're next to a park. You're next to Avondale Park, and that didn't help at all.
No, I mean there's a an absorbent element to the park on the one side. On the other side, it's incredibly hard and built up areas. So you can just be unlucky as to how that runoff occurs there. But we would certainly be prone to greater recurrent flooding if it weren't for these measures. So it's great that we're thinking ahead on this, because will this happen again? Inevitably, it's bound to, isn't it, really? You know, the climate change being what it is, instead of wishing for the best, we're preparing for the worst.
As Headmaster Ben McMullen mentioned, Avondale School is over 100 years old. I wondered if newer schools had fared any better, so I went to Thomas Jones on St Mark's Road to ask the head, David Sellens. David, tell us about the flooding that happened in July 2021.
It happened very quickly. The deluge meant that the school flooded very, very quickly. When they built Thomas Jones in 1972, it was built very, very cheaply. Big holes were dug and all the remains of the previous tenement buildings were just left behind. So that meant there's always going to be a problem with drainage. And on that occasion, when it flooded, the rain just didn't soak away, and it meant that very quickly the school was flooded. About half of the school was flooded in total. Where we're sitting now, it's about 10 centimetres of water, and you'll appreciate an awful lot of damage. I don't remember the exact figure, but we're talking somewhere around sort of £50,000 worth of damage.
What mitigation has been made at the school? You Have you made any structural changes?
We have, yeah. The drainage system was reinvented, although there's still some more work to do with that, which I think I'm very optimistic that the local authority are going to commit to. We are also more inventive. We employ at a very reasonable rate. We employ a landscaper periodically. And we were able to tap into his expertise in terms of let's do things slightly differently than how we have. You know, Ben was talking earlier about how you know, planters, for example, can play a huge part in absorbing lots of moisture, and that's something we hadn't considered in the past, and we've done a lot more of that over the last 2 years. Should it happen again, and I think we have to sort of assume it might do. You know, I'm a great believer in looking at a worst case scenario and then tracking back to ensure that if it does, you know, how can we actually reduce the impact it has? Should it happen again, I think with all those elements, you know, an adapted drainage system, lots of soakaways, which we've worked very hard to install, a better drainage system per se, it should be that the damage is far less significant.
Back to Fiona and James at the Town Hall to find out how the Nottingdale Future Neighbourhoods 2030 project is coordinating efforts to improve our flood resilience. So, James, this happened in 2021. Since then, the Nottingdale Future Neighbourhoods programme has started up, which is doing work to alleviate the situation in and around Nottingdale.
The Future Neighbourhoods project is really useful in bringing together a range of environmental issues. So energy, carbon, net zero, as well as making sure that we can adapt to extreme weather in the future and put those changes in motion. So the wider picture in terms of what we're doing as a council and what other agencies are doing. So in the strategy, we're focusing initially on flooded communities, so making sure that communities are more aware of flooding, better prepared for flooding, and more able to recover. The Flood Action Group is part of that, so supporting the Flood Action Group is really important. Making sure that we're prepared as a council and other authorities are prepared in responding. So at the moment, we're updating our multi-agency flood plan, so it's a document that kind of brings together all of those players to make sure that the response is better than it was in the past and as good as it can be. And more wider than that, there are practical steps that are being put in place. So we've secured funding to install sustainable drainage, which is a bit of a kind of broad concept, but basically it's what I said before, which is slowing the flow of water before it gets into the sewer. We're targeting housing estates, we're targeting schools where we have the ability to make those changes, and also working with individuals and communities and to do that. So we've received funding from Thames Water to install SUDs. We've also received funding from the Environment Agency to put sustainable drainage within our housing infrastructure.
Communication is very important, as Fiona mentioned. If there was another event, I mean, it's not supposed to come for another 185 years, but if there was another event like the one we saw in July 2021, would you be able to alert people in Fiona's Road and other affected places that this event was on its way?
Yeah, so one thing we didn't have as a council in 2021 is any sort of warning system that was local. So there was a yellow warning of rain, basically covered the whole of southern England to say there may be extreme showers somewhere in this area. But what we have now, and we've had for the past few years, is a local surface water warning system. So within the council, we have a system that's looking all the time at all the rainfall that's coming in, and we've set thresholds. So if it's predicted to go above that threshold, we get an alert, and then we're able to disseminate that. Working with, in terms of the Flood Action Group, we want to work closely to have that dissemination of messages from kind of the council to community organisations, community groups, or individual residents who really want to know and can put measures in place. So we're not fully there yet, but having community flood plans, flood wardens in certain areas is the aspiration, so that we can really get those local decisions. If people need to put a flood barrier in place, they have the warning they need to do that.
And what about texting individuals? I mean, in the same way that the parking people text me if my car's in a space that's been suspended.
There could be the potential to do that. I think one thing that is really important to bear in mind is the uncertainty with this rainfall. Even 3 hours out from the rainfall event in July 2021, it wasn't that certain that it was going to hit exactly that area at exactly that time. But all the time, the forecasting is improving. The ability to get messaging out there is improving. I think one thing that would be useful is maybe testing those communications outside of a rainfall event to see what's happening, because what you don't want to do is be constantly sending out messages when alerts are just above a threshold. You want the messaging to be right, to get to the right people at the right time, and not kind of need to be
Don't cry wolf.
Exactly, yes.
I mean, it's good that the council and Thames Water and the Environment Agency are working on solutions in the kind of macro level. But there's also stuff that we can do as individuals, whether it's, you know, in our businesses, in our homes, in our community groups. There's stuff that we could be doing to improve the situation, and every little helps.
There's all sorts of stuff that you can do. I mean, basically, everything from depaving parts of your area. So if you live on an estate, does all the hard surfacing need to be there? Could there be a rain garden which would look nice and provide more drainage? Even small things like if you've got planters outside, if you've got service buildings, again, on big estates or community areas, you can have green roofs. All those things can be done. They're not very expensive. They don't need much maintenance. There are other things that can be done, like local community knowledge is really powerful. We've got a project that we've just started where people have adopted a drain, glamorously. What we do is, after a heavy rainfall, we have a look and see, is the drain coping? If it isn't, the one at the end of my road wasn't, I call James. And James gets the council to come and look at it, because council are responsible for drains. Second time it rained, it was still slow. So that time Thames Water had to dig up the road and something had gone wrong deeper on in the system. It's a really small thing, but that sort of thing, because it's on a major junction, because it goes on to Ladbroke Grove, that sort of thing really makes a big impact. But thinking about flooding is also thinking about your neighbours. So if you know that somebody next door struggles, mental health, mobility, you know you need to get to them. And you know if you've been flooded, how bad it can be and how quickly it can change. And you know that people after an event will need some support and some help, because not everybody copes with it as well. There are other projects looking at insurance, because huge numbers of people in Notting Hill can't get insurance anymore. So the government set up a very good programme to say everybody's going to be insured. We're going to set up something called Flood Re. Flood Re doesn't work in Notting Hill because it cuts out after you've got more than three separate households in a building. So all those subdivided Notting Hill houses, they can't get it. So there are things that need to change on that level. There are lots and lots of projects, but talking to your neighbours, working out where spaces could be that can create more drainable surface, noticing what doesn't work, that area in your road that always collects enormous puddles, knowing your neighbours. Those are very easy things that absolutely anyone can do. And the other thing is to join with your neighbours as a community, because when you're a group, you can ask questions. And when you ask questions, you understand, and then you can make your own contributions. So if there's anybody listening, I'd say to them, talk to your neighbours and think about contacting the National Flood Forum. There's loads and loads of information on their website, much more than I can tell you. And it's really practical and easy to understand. So those sorts of things. And then further up the scale, There are things like flood doors. So they're devices that literally fit over part of your door, like the sort of thing you see in Hammersmith near the river. Those sorts of things can be useful. Non-return valves, you know, that's the next stage, something to stop sewage rising up in your system. There are lots and lots of things that could be done. But the answer is always to speak to the experts. So look at the National Flood Forum website, and that will give you a good overview. Talk to your neighbours.
The other thing, of course, is there are some bad habits that some of us have. I mean, we've all heard of fatbergs. They're made up of lots of individual actions, aren't they?
Yeah, I was with a Thames Water contractor today, with guys going down a manhole and looking to see, to survey the system. And when you see the size of the Victorian sewer pipes, they're small. These guys are in a stress position. They're crawling through because they're not very wide. They were built at a time when not everywhere had running water. So that's the system we're working with. So the guy said to me, if somebody drops three tissues, they can form a little plug. If somebody else is potting up some plants and a few of those little pebbles get in there, that goes down on top of the tissues. And then along comes somebody else who tips some cooking oil down. That's the seeding of your fatberg. So the big message is the only stuff that should go down the lavatory is the stuff your own body makes. So no sanitary protection, no nappies, no wipes, no food. That stuff doesn't belong there because that's just starting off at the beginning of a fatberg.
Notting Dale, of course, is the location of a number of underground rivers.
Yeah, so the Countess Creek is an old lost river now. So basically flowed from Little Wormwood Scrubs down the western side of the borough, so around the borough boundary with Hammersmith and Fulham, all the way down into the Chelsea Creek. So part of near Lots Road, there used to be the Kensington Canal, which basically came up part of the western boundary. But when lots of the properties were constructed in the 1800s, the water course was absorbed within the sewer network. So there is a sewer that runs down basically along a similar alignment that's called the Countess Creek Sewer, and it takes water from the surrounding catchment. So there were other tributaries as well, didn't necessarily have names from what I can see, but tributaries that came from parts of Notting Hill and down, and there was a joined the Countess Creek in and around Notting Dale area. So when it was farmland, there probably would have been a ditch at the edge of a field that went down and joined the watercourse. So all of that now is absorbed within the Thames Water sewer network.
We all know Thames Water is got very public funding issues at the moment. Are we ever going to replace the sewers that were built by Basil Gett back in the late 19th century?
I mean, when you look back at the history of the sewer network as it's been constructed, probably not many of your listeners will have done so. But you see that, you know, flooding happened in 1917 in the borough. And then a few years after that, the Northwest Storm Relief Sewer, which takes water from Westminster through Kensington and Chelsea to Hammersmith and Fulham, was constructed in the 1920s. So you see that flood events do kind of recalibrate what's required and may then lead to infrastructure planning in the future. So the council's working collaboratively with Thames Water in their future planning of infrastructure. But there's no certainty at the moment about what upgrades will happen and when they are going to take place. They have a five-year cycle for infrastructure upgrades. So we're starting the process again at re-looking at what they plan to do in the future.
It does seem that we are going to have to really concentrate on the SUDS style issues. What does SUDS stand for?
SUDS stand for Sustainable Drainage Systems. It's just a fancy word for saying lots and lots of different ways in which we can slow down water before it gets into the sewer. They can be preferably green, so green roofs, rain gardens, sus planters, or they can be things like permeable surfaces, permeable paving, looking at different ways of doing things. They're not particularly new anymore, but it's just a case of needing to expand the delivery much, much wider than we have done already.
And there are a number of SUDS initiatives that have taken place as part of our future neighbourhood, the Nottingdale Future Neighbourhood. And we went to look at the Verity Close Garden, which is a very good example.
I'm Sarah. I'm the Sustainability Programme Manager at the Lancaster West Neighbourhood Team. Today I've sat in the Verity Close Garden of Life, which was a space that we co-designed with residents. It was delivered back in March 2023, and it includes a fully sustainable sensory garden complete with sustainable urban drainage system, an energy generating gym equipment, and some food growing spaces for residents. It was previously a garden space that was perhaps underused. It had some old play equipment, but there was nowhere for parents to sit and watch their children play. There was nowhere really for socialising. There was nowhere for food growing. And residents said to us that they'd really like a more peaceful space that they could use for recreation, also a bit of exercise. And then that tied in with our council objectives to create more biodiverse green space for our residents and also to mitigate the impacts of flooding in the area.
Tell us about the flooding that happened in 2021.
So very nearby to the Verity Close Garden of Life in 2021, the properties at Lower Clarendon experienced really bad flooding. So 8 homes were severely damaged, leading to residents have to move out for a number of years. It cost a lot to both them in terms of their well-being and to the council in terms of reparations to have to fix those properties. So we're looking at as many ways as possible, greener ways as possible, to try and repair that. One of the ways is a swale that's been installed at the Verity Close Garden of Life. So a swale is essentially a big dip in the ground. It does more fancy things than it sounds, and it's really nicely planted so that any water that is accrued in it when it rains sits there and slow drains into the sewer system so that it doesn't get overwhelmed. Another thing that we've done as part of the Future Neighbourhoods programme is install a rain garden, a terraced rain garden at Lower Clarendon. That essentially captures the water as it falls, uses it to water the plants as much as possible, and then anything that's left over drains really slowly into the sewer system, again to stop that overwhelming.
Could you explain the concept of slow the flow?
Yes, slowing the flow, particularly in Nottingdale, is a network designed to reduce the amount of water that flows into the sewer system in the event of a flood in an area that we know is quite badly affected. So North Kensington sits within something called a critical drainage area. So essentially all the water from the surrounding area sort of comes right here as a focal point. So what we can do is there is a number of things. We can improve our infrastructure, which is what slowing the flow is all about. But then we can also work with our existing green spaces to make them more adaptable to the effects of flooding. As we know, with climate change, flooding events may become more frequent and they may become worse when they do. So anything we can do to stop the water flowing over the surface in the event of a flood, make sure it goes anywhere but houses first, is a big priority for us.
And on a micro scale, can people at home take inspiration from what you've done on a bigger scale and do it at home in tiny little ways?
Yes, absolutely. There's lots of things that people in their own homes can do. There is a lot of advice on the gov.uk website about preparedness in the event of a flood. But there are also things, if you have a particularly green thumb, you can do. For example, SUDS planters are boxes that connect to the drain pipes on the outside of your building. So instead of it going, when it rains, from your roof straight into the sewers, it goes into your planters first. So it's a good way to recycle that water, make sure you've got really green and biodiverse plants, and also then help stop that flooding in the future.
If swales, rain gardens and planters can help build our resilience, I wondered what trees, the largest plants in our cities, might be able to contribute to slowing the flow. So I took myself to Nottingdale's largest park, Avondale, to meet a man who should know. I'm here in Avondale Park with James Burton, who is the Senior Arboricultural Officer at the Royal Borough. Hi James, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. Good to be here.
James, we've heard a lot in this show about flooding and the problems of too much water reaching the drains. How do trees help us stem the flow of that water?
Trees, by their very nature, have roots in urban areas, and those roots absorb water. So that takes additional moisture out of the soil that then doesn't reach the waterways and you know, put pressure on the existing drainage system.
Do we do a lot of work that manages the trees in order to stop the flooding?
We have approximately 8,000, just under 8,000 street trees in the borough. There's about another 4,000 trees in the parks and cemeteries. All trees absorb water, whether they're, obviously the bigger the tree, the bigger its water demand. But all trees, by their very nature, they absorb water. So the more tree numbers we have, even if they're smaller trees, the cumulative effect of having those trees will be to take moisture out of the soil, and it will, you know, reduce the pressure on the existing, albeit Victorian, drainage system, which we find throughout most of London.
What are we doing here in Nottingdale to plant more trees?
A few years ago, when the Future Neighbourhoods Scheme first started, Anchor contacted me. So we've planted quite a number of additional trees just in the streets surrounding where we are now. Some of the architecture in this part of the borough is quite old. So, you know, we're not going to... If the tree on the street's only 3 metres from the front of the property, then it's not really good arboriculture practice to plant a tree that, when it's mature, will have a radius of 15 metres. So, you know, it's selecting right tree for the right place. Looking at the architecture, it may be a tree that will grow more vertical in its habit rather than, you know, horizontal and spreading. So right tree for the tree selection is everything.
What we're learning from this is it's lots of little things are very important in alleviating the challenges of increasing flood events.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, we can't do everything. We can't solve everything just by building one big sewer. Lots of other interventions are needed, and we need to work together.
The council has an ambition of creating flood resilient communities, Fiona. Do you feel that your little community, I mean, you're the chairman of the RA, apart from anything else, do you feel that your community is more flood resilient than it was 3 or 4 years ago?
I think we're at early stages. We've only had our first meeting with the council and Thames Water, and so we're still at the learning stage. But anything we do has to be better than nothing, because we are the ears and eyes on the ground. We notice stuff and we can bring it forward. And if we know the right people to bring it forward to, we can cut through large organisations and get things happening. And I think that we can actually, in the longer term, have a big effect on things like planning. So arguing for people not to pave over with hard surfaces that won't drain, those sorts of things have big potential. And I'm hoping that this summer we'll be able to do some things which actually take flood resilience messages out to local people in the Portobello area. So if you want to know more, you'll be able to talk to experts there, talk you through what you can do. Simple things, more complex things. Is the funding? Who do I speak to? Where do I go? And I think that that is a real answer, because communities that ask questions get results.
Thanks for listening. I hope that our guests were able to answer some of your questions. The average temperatures in London over the last 30 years have been more than 1 degree centigrade warmer than for the previous 30 years. Although the floods of 2021 were extraordinary, as the climate changes, we can expect the extraordinary more and more often. Nottingdale Future Neighbourhoods has been at the forefront of measures to mitigate the risks. The council has produced a local flood risk management strategy, and simple measures like reporting drains that aren't managing the flow of water and reducing hard impermeable surfaces all help to increase our resilience. And as Fiona suggested, if it does happen again, be sure to look out for your neighbours. My name is Piers Thompson. This is Portobello Radio, your local community radio station, and this series has been supported by the Mayor of London. You can find all the previous episodes on your favourite podcast platform. Goodbye.
You are listening to Portobello Talk Radio, the authentic voice of Ladbroke Grove.